Welcome to our Vistage podcast. I'm your host, Marisa Kamal, and I would love to introduce you to our guest, Saad Ali, founder and CEO of Helium, Pakistan's largest marketing services company, now huge across the UAE and GCC. Saad, your journey is one from humble beginnings. Can you tell us about how you started Helium?
We started very much by accident. Came across a customer who was looking for these kind of services and was not able to find good service providers. So we said that we can help out. I used to be in a very different field of endeavor. I was actually a stockbroker. And at that time, more than 25 years ago, we came across Intel, and Intel was looking for a fulfillment house. And we said, yeah, fine, we can help. And that's how we started. Eventually, how it transpired was that I left the stock market and I became a marketeer, which I had some study of because I did my MBA. So I had some basic knowledge of marketing, and get forward that way. One of the reasons that of taking this endeavor forward was that it's forever a challenge. Every day is a new day for us. Every day we learn something new. Every day we are challenged as an organization, as individuals. There's never a dull moment. You either hate it or you love it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no in between. So anybody who works with us in our team, they are people who love the adrenaline, they love the impossible targets that we deliver to our clients, the deadlines, and the late nights, all night working, etc. The second most important thing about this business is that we work in a lot of sectors. For half a day, I'll be wearing the hat of being in the beauty business. The rest of the day, I'm in the home care, or I'm in automotive lubricants, because you have to know your client's business at least half as well as they know it. Because if you don't know their business, you cannot really advise them or come up with ideas for them. So it keeps you growing as an individual, keeps you learning, it keeps you challenged throughout.
Yeah, so you've gone from being a stockbroker to a marketeer, so you're quite the risk taker. And when did you move from Pakistan to the UAE, and how did you see the opportunity here? Because you're quite far down that journey now, aren't you?
Yeah, so we set up in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
For the UAE, that was not a very good time because it was just coming off of the bursting of the first real estate bubble, which was a huge burst. The economy was regrouping. There were still people, who had gone bankrupt. And the biggest difference, if you allow me to tell you, when I came here, it used to take me an hour to get to the airport from Barsha Heights, which is where our office is, or from Media City.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in the next 2 years, it used to take us 20 minutes. So the actual physical number of vehicles on the road came down by two-thirds in 1 year that we experienced. And then it's from after 2015, it started to climb back upwards. So it was quite a challenging time. And it was very, very tough. Starting any new venture is always, always very tough. Some of my old friends, my classmates who are very senior marketeers or very senior executives, They shudder at the thought of starting something new. And so that's what we did. And we went around knocking doors, and trying to get people to trust us in this market, which was a very big challenge because we are coming from a third world country, and this is a place which is very well served. There are agencies from all over the world. There are American agencies here, there are British agencies, there are Europeans. Everybody's sitting here, and everybody's has unique offerings for clients, for brands. So creating a market for ourselves or gaining market share in this market for ourselves has been a very tough journey.
Yeah, I can imagine because first of all, like obviously I'm fully aware of the crash in 2011 and what it meant, but I had no idea of two-thirds reduction in the amount of cars. That is madness. But you clearly have like a secret sauce here because you've gone from kind of four brands to launching, is it 35 and touching over 75 million customers. So what is it? What makes you and Helium special?
Okay, I'm going to share with you a lesson that one of my mentors shared with me, right?
Thanks.
So, and it's slightly crude. So what he used to say was that only the starving man works, right? The man whose belly is full doesn't. Okay, so so we are starving for success, and to be the best at what we do, to and I think above maybe if I share with you that one of our ethoses has always been to never let our customer down. Okay, so when I talk to my team and when I when we talk about account management or customer service, so the most important thing for us is that when a customer gives us a job, they're trusting us. And that trust is very, very it's very hard earned, first of all. Secondly, it on a different level, it's a very dangerous thing because you yourself have worked in a multinational organization, the competition there within the organization is very tough. Accountability is very high. If you make a mistake, you have to pay for it dearly. So when a customer trusts us with their business, they are actually putting their own career on the line for us. They're giving us business. They've vetted our credentials. They've seen what we can do. Yes, all of that is true, but after all said and done, they're still trusting us with their business. And that's a huge, huge responsibility for us. And we take that very, very seriously. And, so we never say never, we never give up. There are times when when we've delivered things that we thought were impossible to deliver because we just didn't stop running. And, that's what I can say is, so the first part is that we are starving for success, and the second part is that we just don't want to let our customers down.
I love that. And customer centricity is everything. You're right. And if you put the customer at the center of everything that you do, then it will pay dividends. How do you talked about trust slightly there, kind of internal in the office and external for customers. How do you build that trust? Because it's earned, isn't it? So how do you earn it?
By always being truthful at any cost. And I learned that in the stock market. Both of my first lessons were from being a stockbroker. So as a stockbroker, I always looked after my customer's interest before my own. And I always taught my team to do the same because What we made was a small percentage. You make 0.5%, you make 1% on the deal. Okay. But what the customer is doing is putting 100% of that deal into the mix. So if you're buying a stock for $100, right, and if you're buying $1 million worth of shares, then it's the customer's $1 million, right? All that we are going to get out of it is 1%, right? So my ethos was that I would never ever advise my customer against their interest or my interest, right? So I would tell my teams and my trading desk, never had a target. I mean, you work for HSBC. Imagine that a trading desk does not have a target. So my trading desk never had a target. So they never had to actually do anything on a day-to-day basis. And what I told my team was that if there's nothing to be done, if you don't see the market going in any direction, okay, then tell the customer that there's no reason for us to recommend, a transaction or a trade to a customer if we don't think of value for ourselves. And we brought that into this business as well, where we advise our customer the best way forward, irrespective of what that advice does for us and our business. Because if my customer trusts me, I'm going to make a lot of money from that client. Okay. It doesn't have to be on this project or this trade today. Right. And I've learned a lot by reading some very, very, very reading the lessons of some very big people who've actually done things themselves. So there's you come across a lot of books, right? And there's a lot of self-help books, and there's a lot of books about business. And if when people ask me, I say, I never read a book written by someone who's not done things themselves. Okay. So I read a lot of Jack Welch, for instance, because he was one of the greatest leaders of the last 5 decades, right? So I read Jack Welch a lot. Some of his lessons are amazing. Okay. And he had one of the guys that was one of his leaders. He wrote a book on the speed of trust, right? And the essence of that book is that once trust is established, the speed at which things go is just unbelievable. It's incomparable to anything else. So once you've established that trust, and you establish it by being truthful, when we make a mistake, we are the first ones to tell our customer.
I love that. There's a
Yeah.
like I have to read that. And there was one thing you said about, just I think it's around building that total relationship balance with the customer. It's like not one shot, it's a lifelong relationship that you're building. And I do think, from your experience as a stockbroker, you were definitely wise beyond your years back then, because times were very different and the controls weren't there in the same way that they are now. Whereas very much now in that industry, it's like it's tighter controlled and there's regulations to protect investors, but it still can be, can be quite self-serving, I think, and people not looking after the customer. So it's interesting to hear your reflection some 20 odd years ago. I'm interested to see how that ties a lot of what you were talking about then, like trust, excellence, and passion and stuff. It sort of flows into the values that Helium has. Can you talk about what those means? It passion, excellence, teamwork, what's the fourth one? Integrity.
Yeah.
How
So
do those play out for you?
integrity is being truthful in not just in words but in thought. Okay, so if I don't think this is right for you, I will tell you. Right? So this is the level of integrity that we want to we want to adopt and work with, where we tell you what we think. right? Because I mean, there are many levels. So there is one level where you, if I'm a shopkeeper, you come to me and you ask me for a product, I give it to you, right? And it's the product is perfectly fine, you know, I give it to you for the right price, etc. That's a level of integrity. There's another level of integrity where you come to me, you ask me for a product, and I know it won't work for you. And I tell you, you ask me for this product, but it's not for you. Okay? So this is the level of integrity we want, or trust we want to build with our customer, and it comes from this integrity first. Secondly, when I make a mistake, 90% of the time, nobody will find out. Okay? Because if I can see it, I can correct it. Right? But I encourage my teams to talk about that, to tell the client that we made a mistake, we are correcting it. Okay? Because when you are, so you see, the another important aspect of honesty is that it basically improves you over time. Because if you keep being honest in your personal and professional life, and if you follow that, then you have to do things in a particular way. For example, if you if I'm supposed to come in at 9 in the morning and there's no one else in the office, and I come in at 9:30, right? Nobody's seeing it. I don't need to tell anyone that I came in half an hour late. Right? I can hide it. But then what it'll do is that it'll make me keep coming at 9:30 until I get caught. Or I can be truthful about it and I go to my superior or whoever and I say, I came in half an hour late. Now, because I am committed to telling the truth, I have to improve myself. You know, that's the beauty of being truthful. It sounds, you know, to the cynical, it sounds silly and stupid and idiotic. Going and getting yourself in the tools, but in the long term, it has huge benefits,
Yeah,
right?
these values are
You
clearly
know,
like intrinsic to who
yeah,
you are.
and
How
they're
do
intrinsic to the excellence that you want to, you know, that you want to deliver in your in all that you do, and without passion, if I don't like what I am doing. Right? If I don't love it, if I am not passionate about it, then the best work never comes forward. Right? So for us, passion is about being passionate about the ideas we generate. So if we don't like an idea, we don't present it. Right? We have to keep searching, keep looking, keep thinking, keep going back to the drawing board until we like it. Okay, small side story. When I started out in this business 23 years ago, I got a project and I had to hire a design professional to make a logo. And he made me about eight logos. And I took it to the client and he liked one logo. I went back to the designer. He said, oh, that one was just for show. He chose this logo. Okay, so I said, okay, you know, now what? So the client kept changing things. I kept going back to the designer. He would keep doing whatever the client asked. One time, four times, three, four times later, I asked him. I said, why don't you come with me to the client? So he says, no, I don't go to the client. Clients don't know anything. Okay. So you know, here we are grown up with the story that the client is always right, and you know, okay. And here I am standing in front of this design guru, and the design guru is saying to me that the client doesn't know anything. Okay. And it took me 20 years to understand what he was saying. Right?
Enlightenment.
Yeah. So it took 20 years of being in that similar in industry, brand marketing, consumer, to understand what that guy was saying to me in my first year of endeavor. Okay. What he was saying to me was that it is my job to tell the client what is good for them. Okay, it's not their job to know, it's my job to know. I'm the professional of my field, right? My customer, the brand manager, is, his job is to manage the brand, right? His job is not to design things. His job is not to design, interactions, design campaigns. His job is to overall manage the whole show,
Yeah, and
right?
it's so important that you get to understand what the client's vision is so that you can then translate it into what they want. And you often see, with consultancy firms and clients, it's always the clients change their mind or the client's done this, but clearly there's just a lack of understanding at the outset to help bring out the best in the client and build that relationship. So you're thinking the same, but you're the expert and you can bring it to life for them.
And it takes a level of integrity to go to the customer and say that what you are asking for is not the right thing, for instance.
Of course.
Right? Because it's very easy to just go ahead and do what the client wants. Right? The client has given you an order, you take the order, you execute it. Okay, so say he says, I want to talk to 1 million consumers in this area. Okay? It's my job to see whether this is a is if this is the best way forward for the customer. I will respond to his inquiry. If he's asking me to design an interaction for 1 million consumers, I will design it. But at the same time, I will also see whether this is the best foot forward for them.
Yeah.
If it is, fine. If it's not, then it's my job to tell them that here is your design for 1 million interactions, but here is another idea. Maybe we can do this for 100,000 and you get the same result. Right? And that's where my expertise comes in. This is where my experience of working with 100 brands comes in. Okay? My client is working with one brand. I work with 100 brands.
Yeah,
Okay? That
you've got so
has
much
to.
more exposure that they're not, that obviously they don't have. And so it's really important to bring that to life for them, isn't it? And use that to make their business, to help their business grow.
You see, there's so many consumer categories that have no relationship to each other, and the people managing those categories never know what the other guys are doing. They're not interested.
Yeah.
They have their own, they have their own axe to grind and ladder to work up. They're not interested in looking here, there, everywhere, Okay, it's like the horse wearing those things on the side, right? So his job is to run in one direction.
Yeah. Tell me, what have been your biggest challenges? So you've got loads of experience, you're up there with the best at what you do. What have been your most challenging moments?
Obviously, adversity and crisis are very challenging. For example, the corona crisis, the coronavirus was a huge challenge because, as a business, our main the work that we do, we basically design consumer interactions, right? At the point of sale or at places where consumers congregate, for example, at events and concerts, in malls, in parks. So what we do is that we design interactions that highlight the brand's key unique selling propositions for the consumers to experience. Okay, so we do this inside the store and we do it outside the store. Now, by definition, this is something that is a corona spreader business, right? So the first business to completely shut down was our business. We went from, 100 to zero in 1 month. Immediately, everything just shut down across the region, right? Across all countries that we were operating in, everything just, shut down on us. And some of our competitors immediately closed shop, fired all their employees, and went home. And I was advised to do the same thing. But we weathered the storm. We brought the team into confidence. We shared all of our challenges with the team. And, we all took a pay cut. We reduced our costs. We took losses for 2 years. And, we found new areas of business during that time. So within each danger and each challenge also lurks an opportunity, but you have to have the, resilience to find it. We developed a whole new line of business during that time because our core business was finished. We had a team of very able people who were committed to the cause. So they came, they went out, and they found new things to do. So that was one very big one. I think people are always a challenge, and for a company of our size, and one of the most challenging things that happens is that we work with typically we work with top level global brands like Pepsi, like Coke, like clients like Unilever. Now every time they like one of our guys, they hire them.
I can imagine there's lots of poaching in that space because they
Yeah,
work so
right.
closely, right?
They work very closely with our people, and because of the values that we espouse, that close, the level of trust, the camaraderie, everything, that just gets to a very high level, and we get poached a lot. So that's always a challenging aspect of our business. But there's a bright side to it. We can take it negatively, or we can take it positively. I have a lot of allies across the region, across all companies and clients, people that have worked with me. And so,
Yeah, of course. It just improves your, I guess, your network. You've got insiders now.
got insiders. I've got a lot of people say good things about us,
Yeah, of course.
so even if they don't directly give us business, but there's always references happening. People, every month, every 2 months, somebody will come in, call in, and say, XYZ gave me your number.
Brilliant.
So you don't have to really do a lot of business development. It just gets done for you.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And look,
Yeah.
we've talked a lot about challenges, and clearly I'm interested to see now, like, what's next for you personally?
Personally, I honestly, if you ask me, I'm not. I started out as being the man with the nine hats. I was the CEO. I was the CSO. I was the CMO. I was everybody in the organization. We were a very small company. But for the last few years, I'm out of operations. The team takes care of things. They don't let me in most of the time because then I meddle and I say, no, this, we got to improve. So they hide. Now, one of the things that happens is that they hide things from me. They hide proposals that are going to go to the client because I make them do more, improve the thing and things like these. I think for me now, what I want to be known for is to be the most admired agency in the region.
It's good. That's a good place to be. And I like the word admired as well. You know, it's not necessarily the biggest, the highest revenue, although I'm sure you'll get there as well, but admired just it gives it like an extra zing, doesn't it? Yeah,
No,
look.
they're very big giants in our field of endeavor in marketing. There are companies, that have billions of dollars of revenue and turnover. So we're never going to get there. So,
But admired is nice because it's like a, it's respected and trusted. All of the values that you talked about are summed up in that. Great. I have one last question for you, Saad, before we wrap up. And we ask all of I ask all of our podcast guests this. What advice would you give to a young entrepreneur?
So my first advice is to get serious early, right? So when we are growing up and when we are in our 20s, we think that there's a lot of time ahead of us, and that time, it evaporates very quickly because the energy levels that we have in our 20s, we're not going to have half as much in our 30s, and we're not going to have half as much as our 30s energy in our 40s. So the 20s are a time of great endeavor if we can manage it. If we can manage to bring seriousness to our sort of thinking, and that's the first thing. The second thing is something very different. I would advise very young entrepreneurs to start by working for someone else. Okay. Working for yourself is good, but it has many pitfalls. So one of the things that happened to me was that I started out as an employee of a very large corporation, Exxon to be exact, and I worked there for a year and a half, and I learned a lot in that year and a half. Their processes, how to create a process, how to build it, how does it evolve? In that just that 1.5 year taught me a lot, and I got paid to learn. You see, when you work for someone else, they teach you and they pay you. Okay, when you work for yourself, nobody's paying you. You have earned everything, and as an entrepreneur, the most difficult thing is that you might be doing great, there's nothing in the bottom line because after you've paid off all of your teams and all of your expenses, there's nothing left for you. Right? And versus as an employee, no matter what you do, you get paid at the end of the month.
It is important, I think, sometimes as an employee, you sort of look at this entrepreneur life and you think, oh, it's amazing. They've got this business, they work themselves, it's great. And then when you're an entrepreneur, it's the other side is like they just receive a paycheck and nobody notices it also if you're slacking, but I like your reflection, particularly in large organizations, but I like your reflection actually that you're paid to learn. That's a really nice way of looking at it. The exchange is you do a job and obviously they have output for you, but you're learning so much in that environment as well. And I speak from my own experience too.
I mean, look at the resources that you got to deploy, in your job. Those resources would not have been available to you if you were doing your own thing. And the learning that you get from deploying those resources is immense. Just the kind of people that you get to meet, the meetings that you sit in, the boards that you go to, all those things, they are a great source of learning. And they're a great source of exposure for you as an individual. You're never going to get it if you become an entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely.
So always my one of my sons wants to be a filmmaker. And I told him, go and work for a master filmmaker.
Yeah.
Okay? Be his gopher, be his car driver, do whatever he asks you to do. You
Yeah.
will learn more in 1 year just by being next to the guy than by making films for a decade.
Yeah. Awesome advice. Thank you so much. And look, this comes to the end of our interview. It's been a great conversation. I really appreciate your candid responses, and I love your ethos and your values that clearly you bring to everything that you do. So thank you very much, and we will connect again in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.